Okay, welcome back, everyone. And you were in the chat room and we had the question of, are there fears you're working with or are there issues from childhood? Of course, all of us have both. But if you'd like to share something that came up for you in the room, in the breakout room, now is the time. Or if you have questions. And by the way, when I use the example of fear stopping you, I said, for instance, the doctor suggests a test that's appropriate for your age group to test for cancer, and you're afraid to take it. So that's fear stopping you from doing what you need to do. If you take the test and the test comes out negative, but you're still afraid you might have it, so you take the test over and over, that's fear driving you to do something that's inappropriate. So that's the difference. Questions or anything you'd like to share?
I have a question.
Okay, Joanne? Is that you,
I'm Susan.
Oh, Susan, hold it one sec. Let me find you on here.
I'm on the phone.
Oh, I see you. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So what if you're a cancer survivor and your marker tests come up every 6 months? Is that considered an appropriate fear or inappropriate?
Yes, it's totally appropriate because it's a life and death issue over which you have no control. For instance, the rattlesnake has precisely those two characteristics, life and death, and I'm not in control. So whenever you have both of those, it's an appropriate fear. When what's going on is just in your mind, not evidenced in reality, that's the inappropriate fear. And those are the ones, you know, we have every day. That would be the catastrophizing, the worst is going to happen.
Right.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, Susan.
I have a question.
Yeah.
It's Maura. Thank you so much for what you're sharing so far. I have a question in terms of what you had, you know, things from childhood that still impinge upon us. And sometimes I feel like there's almost a grief involved that, you know, maybe as we're older, you know, in our whatever, you know, 50s, 60s, beyond, where we come to terms with something from our childhood, but we feel so much grief because we wish we would have had this epiphany like 25 years ago, you know, like, oh, I wish I would have figured this out when I was 30 and not 50, or, you know, 40 and not 65. And so sometimes it's, there's like a resistance in a way, because you realize how that old belief from your childhood has impacted your entire life. So I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think of an example, and I don't know if that question resonates at all, but there's like a grief in coming to terms with this thing, which will help us be more sane, you know, like it almost, yeah, I could go on, but maybe I'll just.
I know what you mean, and thank you. Well, that's a great question. And let's look at it in two ways. One is there's a mysterious timing when it comes to anything to do with trauma or events from childhood that we still haven't worked out. And this timing is not in our hands. So you just wake up one morning and you're ready to look at something that you've hidden from yourself for 30 years. Why did it happen this particular morning? No way of knowing. So the first thing is to honor the timing and to say, it happens when it happens. And I can't delay it or force it. Secondly, whenever a memory comes up that has to do with childhood and something that you need to grieve, you could just stop right there and let yourself feel that sadness, even for a minute or so, and let it go through like lightning through a lightning rod and into the ground. We're sending it back to Mother Earth. When you do that over and over again, that's our way of doing some of the work of childhood. But the other half is the timing. And sometimes it's even not safe to know what actually happened. So there's that element to it also. Not everything has to be worked out. Not every memory has to be healed. In some instances, it's let sleeping dogs lie. This poem by Emily Dickinson expresses it. So I'll recite it and then I'll explain it. There is a pain so utter, it swallows substance up, then covers the abyss with trance, so memory can step around across upon it, as one within a swoon goes safely where an open eye would drop her bone by bone. So she's saying, some things that happened to me in childhood were so big that I just had to forget them, because if I did now look at them with open eye, rather than faint away, I would fragment, I would fall apart, drop her bone by bone, because I'm not ready to look. So beware of any type of therapy that forces you to look when you're not really ready for it. We're in very mysterious territory when it comes to what we hold in our bodies from our past. We just don't know which part of it is ready for takeout and which part of it is just supposed to stay there and which part is supposed to be worked with a little and then let go of. You'd have to be very respectful of what your body wanted to do. Does this address what you brought up, Maura?
Yes, thank you. And I think what you said about feeling that grief and just kind of letting that shoot down into through the body and down to the earth, which to me is the mother, that's a really key part, because I can feel it already get out of the head, you know, and the neural pathways that go around and around. So but that's really a nice thing to contemplate. So thank you.
And I have a whole section in the book on that. So when you read your, this part of today's assignment, I have a whole section on how to do this grief work.
Okay, thank you.
What part of it we can do.
Okay, Yoli, did you have a question?
Okay, Yolanda.
My question will be on page 14 of your book.
Okay.
But before I go there, I just want to express also that one of my fears is public speaking. And it only happened when I came to America, because when I was growing up, I didn't have any childhood issues about talking. In the community where I grew up, they always allow me to speak up. And I was much loved by the community, and they would treat me like, oh, she's a very bright girl, you know, let her talk and things like that. So, so it was only when I came to America where people would say something like, I don't understand you, you mispronounce things and things like that. So, but I always consider that we are all unique, and I respect you for your uniqueness. So respect me too, you know? So my question then would go on page 14.
Okay, I'm there.
On page 14, it is still on chapter 1 of Sanity.
Yeah.
And before that, you had a very beautiful analogy of the metamorphosis of a caterpillar. And then the last line on that is that all really behind is the part of us that was afraid of this extraordinary transfiguration. And then the next page, it has two lines in there, two columns. Did you find it? It's on page 14.
Yes, I see it. Yeah.
The first column said ego self, and then there is an in parentheses a small s, and then on the other column is higher self.
Yeah.
And everything, every lines in there are beautiful, but on number three and the third line, it says under the ego self, you said unique to each of us. And then the opposite of that, under the higher self, you said the same in everyone.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, I wonder why Dave separated unique from the same, because to me, if we are all the same, it's going to be very boring. It's like if you are watching a field of flowers and they are all violets, it's going to be boring for me. I do love the field of lavenders, but it has a smell that is so beautiful. So that makes up for the, you know, being all the same. But unique, because I don't want to separate unique. We were all, to me, God created us all to be unique, to be different. Like my color is unique to somebody else. My manner of speaking is unique to somebody else, you know. So for it to be separated, for unique to go under the column of ego, and then the same in everyone.
So ego is the Latin word for I, and so I am unique, as is everyone here, and each of us has different fingerprints. So that's our unique self, the I, ego. And then we also have God within. That's our higher self. And that's the same Holy Spirit in all people. So the higher self is, well, let's use this as a simple way of looking at it. In my I, my ego self, small s, I have my unique way of loving. In my higher self, I have the unconditional loving, the same way that God loves. Or another way of saying it is, I can let God love through me. That will be the unconditional holy love. And I can integrate that with my own personal way of showing it. Now the ego and the higher self have come together.
Oh, I see. So this page in here, I'm sorry, the two columns do not negate each other.
Meant to be integrated.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Now
okay.
They go together.
Because I thought you had separated, like the good ones are under the higher self and the lesser ones are under the ego self.
No, it's that they all come together.
All right, got it now.
Okay, did you have more to say?
No, thank you.
Okay, so the part about how childhood and its wounds help us know ourselves, that would be your chapter 4, which begins on page 15. And I just wanted to share this quotation from Jung, which I have here at the beginning of the chapter. The journey with father and mother, up and down, many ladders, represents the making conscious of infantile experiences that have not yet been integrated. And this personal unconscious must always be dealt with first. Otherwise, the gateway to the cosmic unconscious, to our spiritual self, can't be opened. That's a very important quotation. We have to do the journey with father and mother up and down many ladders before we can fully enter the spiritual realm. So the alternative would be the spiritual bypass, in which you think, well, I don't need to do any psychological work because I have a spirituality. But what he's saying is, no, you have to do the psychological work first, hence our topic. That first we want to be sane, then spiritual, then saintly. And obviously they also can fold into each other. But for most of us, it's that journey. Some work on yourself and your relationships as you bring in spirituality, as you bring in sanctity. Somebody else have a comment? All right, well, our time is about up. And next time, if you can read part two, which will be on spirituality, and part two begins on page 45 and it ends on 93. So if you can read that for next week, I mean, most of what you'll get out of this experience is from the sharing that we do and joining what you're reading in the book with it. Because I could never really go through everything that's in the book here. So it's really helpful if you do read it on your own. All right, well, thank you all. And I will see you next week.
And thank you to Dave. Can we give Dave a hand? Thanks, Dave. We really appreciate you. And we will be back next week. We've had a question in the chat about the quote that you just talked about. It's on page 15. The quote that Dave just talked about is on page 15.
Yes. So,
and next week, Dave told us what we're going to be working on spirituality. I will send the link on Wednesday, next Wednesday. And I wanted to mention that I had sent a video about an interview that Dave did with Robert Ellsberg from Orbis Books. I sent that to everyone. And I think that it's okay with Dave that I send another video that he sent to me. And it is on the trickster. And it is a class that he did in San Francisco. So in the email next week, I will include the video on the trickster class that Dave taught in San Francisco. Also, Dave mentioned the daverico.com, all the free articles that are on his website, daverico.com. Look on the button that says free articles and you can use those. All right, thank you very much. Has anybody got any? I think we're all ready to go. And thank you. It says thanks about the one. Oh, the quote that somebody was talking about was the Emily quote.
Okay, the name of the poem is, there is a pain so utter, U-T-T-E-R, utter.
And would they get that?
It's on the internet. Or, I might have quoted it in the book, but it's certainly on the internet. And it's by Emily Dickinson.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. And we will see you next week. Look forward to the email that's coming to get the link next Wednesday. And thank you to Joe. Did a wonderful job, Joe. This is his first time being a webmaster for us. Thank you. All right. Appreciate everybody. Love you all. And we'll see you next week. All right. Bye-bye.